Welcome back to The Roundabout, where the rock is progressive and the puns are excessive. I'm your dutiful co-host, Peter Grant.
And I'm your slacking co-host, Griffith Samuel. Peter's got all the discipline stuff covered, but me, I'm just vibing sometimes, and that's just how it is.
Griff, I'd like to kick off this episode, the last of this semester and our seventh season, with a leading question. I'd like to ask you something, Griff.
I'd like to answer you something, Peter.
Griff.
Peter.
Did you think I'd let us get away with it?
I always knew this day would come one day.
Did you think I'd let us get away with doing an entire semester without playing a Rush album?
I hoped, but I knew in my heart it wasn't going to happen.
No, of course not. And this week, we're playing an important Rush album. Let's be real. There's two Rush albums. Let's be real. Let's be frank. Let's be honest. There are two Rush albums.
Who are the two What are the two Rush albums?
I'm glad you asked. One of them is 2112, which came out in 1976, and which Griff played, like, I think freshman year. I'm not sure if I was even a full-time participant in the show at the time.
What does full-time truly mean?
God knows.
And God ain't hosting this show.
But the other Rush album is the one that we're playing this week, Moving Pictures from 1981. Griff, have you listened to this album before?
Not until today.
Really? What are your thoughts? Well, how about just on this first track? Say, Griff, what's this first song on Moving Pictures? What could it be?
It's a classic.
Is it now?
It's titled Tom Sawyer. And it's it's pretty well known, primarily for the film Ready Player One.
I'm gonna pretend you didn't say that. Tom Sawyer is probably the best remembered Rush song in this day and age. You turn on any classic rock radio station, leave it on for an hour or two, you're gonna hear Tom Sawyer eventually. That being said, there's a reason it's remembered well. It's because it's a great song. Jeez.
Heck yeah, it is.
Rip, do you have anything you want to say about it before we get into it?
My two notes were, the drum work here is particularly fun, and it is good to be back with Rush. And that really sums up my thoughts on it, I think, overall. It's good to be back with Rush, you know?
Well said. I don't have any particular thoughts on it that would be anything but just gushing over how great this song is. It is one of very few Rush songs in which Neil Peart, the drummer and longtime lyricist who died at the beginning of this year, collaborated with someone else on the lyrics. Pye Dubois, the lyricist for fellow Canadian rock band Max Webster. Rush recorded a song with Max Webster in the summer of 1980, and Pye Dubois handed off an early draft of the lyrics to what would become Tom Sawyer, to Neil Peart. And he worked them out from there, and it became this song. It was Geddy Lee's idea to put it at the start of this album because he didn't have a lot of faith in it. He kind of just wanted to get it out of the way first thing. I don't have a source on that, but I remember reading that. Grain of salt.
I gotta say, I think it's pretty good.
It's a great song. Let's listen to it.
It's Tom Sawyer, baby. Let's go.
Thank you.
And folks, we are back. Welcome back to the Roundabout. And in line with that, welcome back to the band Rush. We haven't played them in a hot second here. In particular, this was Rush's album, Moving Pictures. That was Tom Sawyer, the very first song on that album. I'm Griffith Seymour, and I'm joined here, as always, by everyone's favorite Rush nerd, Rush expert, prog rock fan, Peter Grant.
I'm Peter Grant. That is my full title. Please address me as such.
You know, I think we should bring back one of our classic segments. It's a listener favorite. And by the way, listeners, if y'all have a favorite you want to tell us about, DM us over at RoundaboutKHDX on Twitter or RoundaboutKHDX@gmail.com. We read all, I'm saying all, 100% of the things we are sent.
On that note, you're listening to KHDX-FM Conway, Arkansas, the voice of Hendrix. I'm the voice of Peter Grant.
And I'm Griffith. I don't know where my voice is, truly. Is it in my heart? I don't know anymore. But what I do know is we got to bring back my favorite segment, Describe That Cover. Peter, can we talk about the cover of this album? What's going on in it?
Moving Pictures has a fantastic album cover. It is one of my favorites. We have a solid black background on which is written the red text up at the top, Rush, Moving Pictures. And underneath, we have a window into this photograph. It is a picture of the Ontario Legislative Building in Queen's Park, Toronto, with a group of people moving some paintings, either into or out of the building. It's not entirely clear which. It can be said for sure.
See, when someone says moving pictures.
Yeah, it can be said for sure that that is what they're doing. They are moving pictures.
When someone tells me moving pictures, I think film. I don't think literally moving pictures. Rush did a little switcheroo on us here.
Well, we'll get to that. Over on the right side, you can see a group of people dressed in black, and they seem like they're having a very hard time looking at these paintings. They must be some very emotionally moving pictures. And depending on the version of the album that you may have in front of you, I assume you own a physical copy of this album. What kind of person would you be if you didn't? Jeez. Somewhere in there, you can find a photo of the process of taking this picture. And there's a film crew creating a moving picture. That's a triple entendre.
Welcome to the Roundabout, where the rock is progressive. Come on, finish the line.
The entendres are excessive.
One more episode, Griff. One more episode. That's all you have to get through this semester. One more episode. Come on, get your act together. So anyways, Peter. Anyway.
That's all I wanted to say about the album cover. It's fantastic.
I gotta say, this is one of the cleverer album covers we've had, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've had a lot of album covers that are like, this one's wacky, or whatever. But this one, Moving Pictures, is like, no. It's three puns in one, and you have to see them all with your eyes. Wow. Maybe I'm not complaining in this case, you know?
Yeah. But this album is a little long, and we don't have a whole lot of time to talk about it. I would like to get on to this next song.
That's right. In that case, you got anything you want to say about the song before we get to it? Because I have some takes, but I'm thinking of saving them a bit.
I would just like to mention briefly that this next song, Red Barchetta, was inspired by the short story A Nice Morning Drive by Richard S. Foster, and that early on, when I was just getting into Rush, for a while there, this was my favorite Rush song. So take it from me, Red Barchetta is great. It is a jam. I want to listen to it. Griff, you want to listen to it?
You know, this is either the moment where everyone realizes, dang, this song is really good, or they all realize you have bad taste in music, and there's only one way to find out, folks. It's Red Barchetta. We'll be right back. To quote that one vine, vroom, vroom. But we're not in Me Moom's car. We're on the roundabout where the rock's progressive and the puns are excessive.
Aw.
Peter, what was the song we just played?
That song was Red, I've Been Informed, Barquetta, by Rush.
Yeah. Fun fact, Geddy Lee actually mispronounces it in the song, which, fair enough, it'd be like that sometimes. Yeah. I've been there. So, something I noticed about the song that I thought was kind of clever and neat. Mm-hmm. The song's sort of like accelerates like a car.
I adore the way that
you know, and it's like, ooh, that's like a car.
I love how that song is structured. It is so cool. I could talk about that song alone for an hour, so I would like to move on before I get wrapped up in a tangent. This next song is one of my favorite things to talk about in terms of Rush, because the next track is called YYZ, and it's Zed because, you know, Canadian. The intro of the song is played in 5/4 time and is, in fact, a Morse code. They play a dash on an 8th note and a dot on a 16th note. It spells out the title of the song repeatedly.
Listeners, you're learning some Morse code today. And that's our gift to you here on the roundabout for our season finale.
Here's YYZ by Rush. We'll be right back. That was YYZ by Rush from their 1981 album Moving Pictures. What can I say about it that I wouldn't say about every other song on this album? I love YYZ. I love this album.
I mean, I can think of the reverse. I can think of a thing you wouldn't say about this song that you would say about every other song on the album, which is, well, I really like the lyrics.
Fair.
Also, real talk. Evidently, back when they were doing live tours, Neil would just put in some insane drum solos in the middle of this song, and it's pretty rad, I gotta say.
It's so good.
Now, this next song, I've only listened to this album once all the way through in like a hard-focused listen, but this next song coming up, Limelight, it's up there for me because a lot of Rush songs, a lot of Rush lyrics are like, here's a wacky, goofy setting, or, you know what's great? Objectivism, right? Which... those are in descending order of my enjoyment of them. But then you want to talk about the parasocial nature of this.
I'm going to fight this fight to the ends of the earth, aren't I? Neil Peart was an objectivist for like 2 years total.
Yeah, I know. Most of Rush's stuff is wacky, goofy settings. You know, like, if you look at the Rush songs that have like story structure, it's one of the two. And obviously the bounce is heavily weighed towards the good one, not the bad one. But... this next song, Limelight, I think these lyrics are probably, I'll vibe with them, you know? Like, I was like, dang, that's some good writing right there, more than I have with a lot of other Rush songs, and I just think it's neat. Probably, like, the most interesting set of lyrics on the album, in my opinion, honestly.
Limelight was another one of the singles from this album, and it's another one which, if you leave a classic rock station on for, like, 6 or 7 hours, you'll probably hear Limelight. It's not so well-remembered as Tom Sawyer, but it's also... one of those songs, like, it's not like on the surface, but it's right there, you know?
Yeah.
It is lyrically about Neil Peart's dissatisfaction with fame.
Yep.
Because, you know, he was a private kind of dude.
He was just vibing.
And yeah.
Everyone's like, hey, and he's like, I don't know you, dog. Who are you?
I ain't talking I'm not to you your before. Friend, and you have no say over what I do with my drums.
And honestly, based on what I hear of him doing it, with the drums, I'm a step back, Neil. You clearly know what you're doing.
Here's Limelight by Rush.
Stage approaches the unreal for the
You know, listeners, I like doing this show. But sometimes, you're just vibing and you're like, I don't know how I feel about the whole thing. And that's the focus of this most recent song by Rush from their album Moving Pictures, Limelight. I gotta say, I said it before, but, you know, listen to it again. That's a banger of a song, musically, but also, like, thematically, you know? Rush doesn't tend to deal with that sort of stuff generally, do they? Like, what is it? Leave It is the other one I can think of that's sort of in the same wheelhouse of meta-textual discussion.
Okay. These are very different songs.
Well, yeah, but, like, talking about the band process, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I just think it's neat to see that being discussed.
Yeah. Neil Peart always wrote honestly. He just didn't write about himself a lot, and that's one of those rare occasions where it's... I mean, I guess it's not super rare. I mean, there's Circumstances, Fly By Night. Let's say after the 70s, he didn't write about himself very often.
But, like, this is a good one. This is some of that good, high-quality introspection, you know?
For sure. That being said, it's also the end of Side 1, and this next song...
Oh, dang.
...is the last song in the Rush studio album discography, chronologically, with a length of over 10 minutes. It is 10 minutes and 58 seconds in two parts.
Hold up. To be clear here, you mean this is the last song that they recorded that was over 10 minutes long?
That's correct.
Dang. That's wild. See, I mean, you say prog rock to me, and I think... Rush, I think, absurdly long songs, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just strikes me as so odd that, like, oh yeah, this is the last one of those. You know, like, that's a thing that exists. Like, of course it has to, obviously. Any pattern is eventually going to be broken, but, like, dang. The pattern really do be broken, huh?
That being said, I think it's a fitting farewell to that kind of super long form song.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
In their discography, anyway. I think this one is very fun. It took me a long time to come around and appreciate it as a youngin' listening to this album, but it's
a lot. I like
the
image of youngin', Peter. That's funny. I like the electronic bits at the start, especially, like, aesthetically. It's neat. I know it's not the only time they've messed with it, but I was like, ooh, it's like we're in a sci-fi.
If you ever wonder why I like synthesizers so much, it's because this is what I listen to for fun.
You know, yeah, that absolutely tracks. That absolutely tracks.
Here's The Camera Eye by Rush. Thank you. And that was The Camera Eye. Part one was called New York, and part two was called London. That song is based roughly on the USA series of novels by John Dos Passos, and that was a series that Neil Peart greatly enjoyed and admired.
See, one of the things I love about prog rock, especially, you know, the Rush type of prog and the Yes type of prog, is the amount of, like, niche literary references that get fitted in there, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
I just think it's neat.
It can be taken too far.
Let me tell you more about my
topographic oceans.
I was gonna say my Gandalf fan music, but
yeah, Camel. I forgot about that.
I mean, listeners, if y'all want to listen to the episode, actually, after this episode airs, pretty soon after, I should be getting the archive up and running. So if y'all want to check that out on there, if y'all want to listen to our Camel episode after this, you would be able to soon.
Yeah, check it out on khdx.fm.
Let's talk about this next song. First of all, I gotta say, I love the opening.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good opening. It's a real good opening. What's the name of this next song, Peter?
This song is called Witch Hunt, and is subtitled Part 3 of Fear.
Oh? What are Parts 1 and 2, I ask?
Part 3 of Fear came out on this album in 1981. Part 2 came out on Signals in 1982, and Part 1 came out on Grace Under Pressure in 1984. Neil Peart started planning out the series in late 1980 while they were writing this album, and found that this part was just the easiest to write, so he did it first. And then after they did all that, they did Part 4 in 2002. It's funny.
That's very good. So that's like, and you thought the Star Wars movies were complicated. It goes, release order is 3, 2, 1, 4, but obviously chronological is 1, 2, 3, 4, or thematically ordered is 1, 2, 3, 4. Dang, that's neat.
And they kind of made fun of themselves for it on, I think it was the instrumental on Roll the Bones, or an instrumental on Roll the Bones, called Where's My Thing, Part 4 of the Gangster of Boats trilogy. There's no other parts.
The Gangster of Boats feels like a fantasy character. I don't know who, but I feel like you gotta go meet the Gangster of Boats on your...
You better go talk to the Gangster of Boats.
Hey, I'm boating here. I'm boating here, hey! I don't know where I'm going with it either. Anyways, I will say also, to quote Garth Marenghi, I know writers that use subtlety and they're cowards. That's my take on this song. That's my first take on this song.
It's a very good take. Witch Hunt is overall a song about being in the Fear trilogy. It's a song about mob mentality and how fear can lead groups of people to do evil things.
Get a little bit silly with ethics, you know.
Here's Witch Hunt.
Distorted in the flickering light, faces are twisted and grotesque. seem to know what's best for us. Must rise and save us from ourselves.
Hey, Peter.
What?
Hey, Pete. What was the name of that last song?
That last song was called Witch Hunt.
Witch Hunt?
Yeah, by Rush. Witch Hunt, Part Witch... 3 of Fear, well, by Rush, from their album Moving Picture.
Oh, that...
There's only one more song on this
that
album.
That Hunt.
I like that song a lot.
That's a good song.
I like every song on this album a lot. I feel like I've been clear about that, but I want to make it known. I like that song a lot. Griff, what are your thoughts?
The jury recognizes the witness's statement that you like this song a lot and agrees. Pretty much every song on this album is a good song, I gotta say.
Thank you. I agree completely.
On the, whoa, no way. Wild. Welcome to the roundabout, where our work isn't feeable because you don't pay us, but the hosts are agreeable. I tried to make the agreeable thing work, and I don't think it worked out super well, but it was worth a try.
It was worth a shot. It was a valiant effort.
Thank you. Folks, if you want to criticize my joke-making skills, justifiably so, I think, contact us and do so at roundaboutkhdx on Twitter or roundaboutkhdx@gmail.com.
So there's one song left on this album. It's called Vital Signs. The lyrics are a little dense, so I don't want to get too much into them. I do want to talk about the sound of this song. There is some reggae influence to be found here, particularly, I would say, in the percussion section, being, you know, Neil Peart. It's worth noting that reggae influences in Rush's music would ultimately cost them their longtime producer, Terry Brown. The song Digital Man on Signals was a lot more reggae-flavored than anything they'd done up to that point, and Terry Brown hated it so much that he just quit.
Oh, jeez, wow, that's a bit extreme.
Like, he did not agree with that direction, so he just stopped working with them.
I mean, hey, if you disagree with, you know, who you're working with, don't work with them, fair enough, but also, dang.
Not to mention that in the 8 years up to that point that they had been releasing albums, Terry Brown had produced all of them.
Dang, that is wild.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what all that fuss is about, I suppose, eh?
Yeah. Here's Vital Signs by Rush from Moving Pictures.
Mental and environmental change.
That was Vital Signs by Rush from their 1981 album Moving Pictures. And with that, we bring to a close that album, this episode of The Roundabout, and this season of The Roundabout.
I gotta say, I think this is a good album to close on, because think about it. Earlier in the season, you know, we didn't play a lot of prog rock, and I think we got back to the vibe by the end. But the pitch of The Roundabout has always been where the rock is progressive and the puns are excessive. And we got a prog rock song here. And we got a visual pun on the front.
A triple visual pun.
Indeed. I just think that's neat.
It is neat.
Folks, I hope you all are having a wonderful Saturday evening right now here with us on KHDX, the voice of Hendrix, here in Conway, Arkansas. And we'll see you next semester, eh?
Y'all enjoy the end of this year and the start of this next one. We'll see you probably at a different time, but...
You will enjoy it. Or else.
We'll still be here, whether you listen or not, so you might as well, huh?
There we go. There we go. Ain't that the truth?
Our intro this season was Midnight Rendezvous by Cassiopeia, and our outro was What You Won't Do for Love by Bobby Caldwell. Here's that song one last time, and we'll see you all around.
Searched to find the love within.